Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We start today in Washington, where on Tuesday, House Democrats proposed new rules around the impeachment inquiry, including plans for a more public phase of witness testimony. Testifying yesterday was
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman.
Before that, it was
State Department official Philip Rieker.
And before that,
President Trump's former top Russia advisor, Fiona Hill.
U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland.
Former ambassador to Ukraine, Maria Yovanovitch.
Witness after witness after witness. Each person in this parade of testimony plays a role in the impeachment puzzle, and today we'll sort it all out. And we'll also pull the curtain back on what it means for a career civil servant to testify, possibly in defiance of the White House. What are the risks and what are the costs? I'm Sarah Gonzalez, co-host of NPR's Planet Money podcast, sitting in for Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. Joining me now are Karun Demirjian, congressional reporter at The Washington Post, and Siobhan Hughes, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Hi to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Karun, Nancy Pelosi announced this week that the House would hold a vote on impeachment on Thursday. What exactly will House members be voting on?
They're going to be voting on a package of rules and regulations, basically, for how they're going to be conducting the rest of the impeachment inquiry going forward. It's going to give them a structure that they can kind of hold up to everybody of how they're going to handle the closed-door hearings, how they'll handle the open hearings, how they will handle questions about due process, how they will basically conduct themselves in an impeachment inquiry that's going to be highly scrutinized. And it's a sign from Democrats that they feel like they're in a good place to signal to everybody that they are full steam ahead. They are going in the direction of impeaching the president. This is not an impeachment vote itself, but it is a establishing how it will take place in the next several weeks ahead.
And how will this affect the inquiry moving forward?
Well, it doesn't affect the general trajectory of the inquiry that much, to be perfectly honest. I think that House Democrats were feeling very good about the last few weeks of witnesses that they had come in. Some have given testimony that's fairly incriminating of the president and his inner circle when it comes to Ukraine policy. So they're going to continue building those blocks, bringing in these witnesses will agree to come. There's some court challenges that are slowing down the process with some people that could be key witnesses. But generally speaking, they've been building this case from the State Department, from the National Security Council angle, pulling in different people, sometimes from energy, from DOD. And they're in the corroboration phase right now of the story they feel like they already have to eventually tell to the public that will form the basis for the articles of impeachment that everybody is expecting them to file and vote on successfully before the end of the calendar year.
Siobhan, Tuesday's 10-hour-long testimony from Alexander Vindman seemed particularly important considering he was listening in on the call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. What do we know so far about Vindman's testimony?
Well, we know two things. Number one, the new information that Colonel Vindman came forward with is that the transcript of that call, some key words, at least from his perspective, had been omitted. It doesn't change the basic information that we know about that phone call. Things like Burisma, the name of that gas company, were mentioned, but it is going to raise questions about how the White House handled the transcript and record of that call. Separately, what we know from Democrats is that Republicans used that closed-door hearing to try to get Mr. Vindman, Colonel Vindman, to divulge the identity of the whistleblower. Now, Republicans say they were only trying to find out where Colonel Vindman got his information so that they could understand his biases. But nonetheless, it does heighten the concerns that Democrats and others have about the privacy of the whistleblower and then also this person's security.
And commentators on Fox News and some Republicans are attacking Vindman's credibility in part because he was born in Ukraine, even though he spent most of his life in the U.S. How do congressional Republicans view Vindman's credibility as a witness, Siobhan?
So that tactic backfired. Liz Cheney, who is the chair of the House Republican Conference, called those attacks on Colonel Vindman shameful. Republicans clearly wanted no part of that. But that said, Republicans are simply saying that Colonel Vindman got it wrong, that while they appreciate his service, they disagree with his assessment of what President Trump did. And we should also note that in his opening statement, Colonel Vindman came out and flat out said that he was concerned by Donald Trump's phone call. He said that he went to White House lawyers twice, once about the phone call and once also about a July 10th meeting in which the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, brought up investigations to some Ukrainian officials, basically as a condition for securing a White House meeting. So Democrats view that as very credible, but Republicans simply said Colonel Vindman had no basis to be concerned.
And Siobhan, give us a rundown of where we're at in terms of witnesses in this inquiry overall. Like, how many people have come through so far? How many more could we expect?
Sure. So 9 people, including Colonel Vindman, have testified so far. They've predominantly come from the State Department. On Wednesday, 2 more people, State Department officials who had worked for Kurt Volker, the special envoy to Ukraine, are coming forward. A big one, though, is going to be on Thursday when Tim Morrison, a National Security Council official, testifies. This is somebody who doesn't pull any punches. We know from briefings that he has given to the acting ambassador to Ukraine, William Taylor, that he has been concerned about what he saw in the White House. And after that, the Democrats are interested in hearing from some high-profile people. It's not clear they're going to get them as witnesses, such as the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, and then also John Bolton, the national security advisor who was fired in September.
And Karun, for those who haven't been following carefully, who are these folks generally? Where do they work? What are their backgrounds? What are they saying? Like, have most of the witnesses viewed President Trump's relationship with Ukraine in any particular way?
For the most part, the witnesses that have come forward have been career, or if they're politically appointed officials, they are people that have been following this region very closely and have job titles that show they have currently or very recently, when these things were going on, had responsibilities in this area of the world. So you've had National Security Council officials that were senior directors and directors for Europe and Russia policy come in. You've had State Department officials that were either specifically tasked to Ukraine or tasked to Europe, which had oversight of Ukraine from a higher up level. And that's been the general gist of the people that you've had come in. For the most part, they have all been adding to parts of the, either corroborating or adding to parts of the narrative of the how there was a regular Ukraine policy that was being pursued by the national security officials in the administration. And then there developed this shadow Ukraine policy that was being directed more by Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, that seemed to have buy-in from Trump's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, where there were the quote-unquote 3 amigos that were appointed to run it after the ouster of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Masha Yovanovitch. And so they're all telling parts of this story. I would say probably the one exception to this, and the person whose testimony has been called into question by many of these people, is the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. This is going to get a little bit more into the weeds, but we know from the text messages that Kurt Volker, the former special envoy to Ukraine, provided to the impeachment investigators that Sondland was defending Trump to some of his colleagues in the diplomatic circle, saying there's no quid pro quo here, when he was challenged by people like Bill Taylor, who, by the way, has given the most detailed roadmap type testimony to this impeachment inquiry. People like Bill Taylor, people like Vindman yesterday, their testimony basically says, Sondland, you weren't telling the whole truth, or you weren't being very candid about what the truth was here. And that's raised questions about, well, were there people who were blocking for the president? Sondland is one of the quote-unquote 3 amigos that was appointed along with Volker and Rick Perry, the energy secretary, to run this side channel Ukraine policy that seemed to be connected to Giuliani. And so it's interesting that his testimony is not matching up with the testimony of many others. But then, of course, this begets the whole political back and forth, where you have the GOP saying, well, that's very nice that all these career officials don't think that the president was up to any good, but they don't have firsthand information the way that people like Sondland did. But as Siobhan was saying earlier, that Vindman's testimony yesterday kind of broke that logjam, because you have somebody who was listening to that call between the two heads of state, between Trump and the Ukrainian president, and somebody who was directly briefed by the participants in some of the more contentious meetings that have gone towards what Democrats believe establishes a quid pro quo. They directly told him what their intentions were. They told Vindman what their intentions were, and he can then turn around and tell investigators that, which is what he did yesterday.
And Siobhan, the focus of much of the reporting on impeachment seems to be, was there quid pro quo? But what else are we seeing come out of the testimony? Is there anything that's still missing for you?
A lot of the pieces of the puzzle have been filled in, but it's the textural details that have been missing. So when did people inside the White House and at the State Department first realize that Rudy Giuliani was directing this shadow policy? To what extent did they try to push back? How did President Trump communicate to Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney that he wanted the military aid to Ukraine to be withheld? How was he so successful in concealing what he was doing from the senators, who really were in the dark about what was happening until late August and early September?
And now let's talk, Siobhan, about the process for one of these people, witnesses in the impeachment inquiry. There was some reporting in the New York Times that said it can cost something like $15,000 for someone to testify. Where do these costs come from?
So it's very expensive to hire a Washington, D.C. lawyer to defend you before Congress. It's hundreds of dollars an hour. This lawyer is helping you prepare testimony. This lawyer is sitting with you in the deposition room for 9 or 10 hours while you as a witness take questions from lawmakers and counsel. This lawmaker is advising you on the follow-up. This lawmaker is negotiating behind the scenes with staffers over the terms of your testimony. And so the expenses can really add up.
And why is it important for these witnesses to get legal advice before they step into this process quickly?
These guys, number one, are in legal jeopardy. You know, they don't know if their actions are going to be questioned by Congress. They don't know if President Trump and the White House will come after them as traitors. And they need to protect themselves.
Kairun Demirjian is a congressional reporter at The Washington Post, and Siobhan Hughes is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
This is The Takeaway. Stay with us.